is the Chris Abraham Show.
This is season 5, episode 51 of the Chris Abraham Show. I think I called the last episode something like episode 40, but it was actually episode 50. So I'm sticking with it. Nobody took my poll. So it's actually going to go to 100 episodes in season 5. We'll see what happens. Maybe 63 episodes, since that's my magic number. Anyway, today's episode, going to be a rainy day, is about America's current destruction is based on the chemotherapy against American right-wing extremists and extremism, rather than actually from right-wing extremism, racism, anti-gay, anti-trans, anti-Asian, anti-black, anti-LGBTQIA+, that the moment that Trump even got close to winning the election, there was either a informal or a formalized, by any means necessary, strategy, which was salting the earth, and we have a salted earth. I feel like a lot of doctors these days are saying that there are certain cancers that men have, like prostate cancer, that generally do not kill the patient. They are cancerous, but they tend not to, they tend not to masticate, that means to chew. They tend not to infect the rest of the body and kill the patient. And there is a belief that maybe people with prostate cancer do not get extreme treatments such as radiation and chemotherapy and so forth. And that radiation and chemotherapy and so forth is just extraneous and does more to destroy the immune system than it does with regard. Like, this has all changed now that there's much better and targeted anti-prostate tumor systems that are based on gene therapy and based on specific DNA-based targeting and all that other fun stuff. But I'm going for an analogy here. I just want you to know that I realize that the science has moved on. But in many cases, how many people, and I'd love to know the number, how many people succumb to chemotherapy rather than their life if they just suffered with their cancer in the first place? And what about the quality of life? What about the willingness to live? What about the pursuit of suicide and self wanting to end the suffering, and the suffering being mostly not from the pain necessarily of the cancer, but from the lack of will to live, from the fatigue and nausea and all the other secondary effects of the cancer treatment. Now, that's always the balance in any environment. But in a color revolution world, you do the equivalent of firebombing Maui in order to lower the cost of living. right? You make major cities completely unbearable and disgusting, and all the rich people leave, and quite possibly rents will decrease, or people will just shutter their all their buildings until the prices become more favorable. And, you know, one might say that in terms of salting the earth, it's become kind of a de rigueur strategy in every environment, right? You have the salt the earth strategy in Ukraine right now. Very literally, the East and the West are salting the earth when it comes to the Donbas region. If we can't have it, nobody can. And I feel like in many ways, this is what happened with regards to Trump. I feel like when you go into Trump's actual and legitimately actual plans for his 4 years, now they're completely different. Now he has a goal of vengeance, right? But it's impossible to make this argument, because I think that the same people who salted the earth and completely gutted America, started a identity politics, cold civil war, have defamed all white Christians as Christo-fascists, have tried to retype non-binary and LGBTQIA as being the standard bearer, and men and women as being some sort of comment dire, obsolete, binary kind of white supremacist, patriarchal definition of othering that one uses to say there's a man and there's a woman, and never the twain shall meet. So, I mean, I started seeing this on the way into Trump. And, I mean, it would be really funny if at some point someone's, someone's messaging or chat app or whatever were to come out with this sort of shadow government thing. When I worked back in the 2000s, I worked with Arianna Huffington's group, which was this whole shadow convention. And the shadow convention was kind of all about, like, creating a shadow, if you will, government that was contradictory and antithetical to the goals of adventurism and warmongering and conservative politique and Western hegemony and white supremacy as defined by the George W. Bush presidency, right? Like, I could get behind that. I was really anti-George Bush, and it was exclusively because of his adventurism, you know, because of Afghanistan, which I also thought was an unjust war. You can't attack a country for the behavior of separatist terrorist cells, right? Like the ISIS and Al-Qaeda and Daesh were not national or country-based organizations, right? Like the people who allegedly flew planes into the Pentagon and into the Twin Towers were, you know, not Afghanis. They were not Pakistanis. They were not Iraqis. They were not Iranians. Or as everybody says, They were, you know, first of all, whatever, like, what was the real narrative of that experience? However, based on the narrative, these were all Saudi. These were all Saudi people. The Bin Laden family is a cosmopolitan, jet set, rich construction development company, infrastructure, just like, you know, like any mogul, like Trump or whatever, like in many ways, Trump is not the definition. What Trump does, as we see from experience, what Trump does, the lifer gubbies, as we used to call them, the gubbies would have nothing to do with it. People with .gov email addresses would rather Lahaina burn completely down, would rather the world go to seed than ever give agency of the office. They even, when they said that they, when all, it was like equivalent to when Muslim terrorists give up all of their moral and ethical obligations to Islam, such as their praying and their not drinking and their not sexing and their being modest and their following their strictures. When you are amongst the enemy, you need to be able to act in a way that would not draw undue attention to yourself. So even people really close to Trump, it turns out, who were simping after him, who were bending the knee, who were kissing his hem, who were saying, you know, the king has clothes. Well, when the king had no clothes, right? So, you know, Pence, everybody in the entire universe that could be attributed to either one way or the other, neoliberalism and neoconservatism, this concept of pro-UN, pro-NATO, pro-adventurism, pro-colonialism, dressed up as an agency. Neocolonialism is defined. In fact, there should be a synonym, which is to say neocolonize equals exportation of democracy. Cultural hegemony is defined as you need to be free and your freedom needs to be neoliberalism and neoconservatism, and your democracy needs to be a culture of atheism, of humanism, and of selective equity and selective egalitarianism, which is to say, if you're out of line, if you do not fit in, if you're not willing to comply, what you're doing is hateful and dangerous and anti-democratic, because democracy is weak and democracy has a glass jaw and democracy is always fragile, and we will go to any, we'll preserve democracy at the end of a gun, the barrel of a gun. So if it takes totalitarianism and autocracy, if it takes temporary tyranny so as to be able to, like,
radical mastectomies of America. Radical mastectomies, anything, cut off everything. Cut off the arms, the legs, cut off the breasts, remove the uterus. Hysterectomy city here, as long as the patient survives in our image, it is all worth it. Quality of life be damned. Yes, you don't have any arms or legs. You don't have the ability to reproduce. You don't have any way to suckle child. The definition of a woman is up in the air. So, let's say all sin, and I'll use a lowercase sin because I'm not talking religion, but everything awful that has happened over the last 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, you know, 7 or 8 years, like, let's just say that all those things could have been prevented if people would have followed chain of command. They would have realized that the president has certain abilities to do things, has certain privileges, has certain controls, is the, if you will, is the, you know, boss of the executive branch. Let's say all those things are true, but if you don't, if you're not willing, if you... So back to by any means necessary. One of the biggest arguments in The Hague when the war crimes tribunal was throwing people in jail and they were going pretty far down the chain of command, the rank and file were saying, I was just following orders, right? So the whole concept of following orders in support of diabolical Nazi fascism, second coming, killing all brown and black and Semitic peoples, and sending Muslims and Mexicans and Jews and Hindus and South Asians and Asians and to a gulag, to send them asunder and so forth, right? Like, that's a moral thing to do, right? A moral thing to do is I refuse to follow your orders because your orders are in support of a Hitler. So no matter how much damage to the economy, to inner cities, to sexual politics and racial politics and gender politics and feminism, no matter how much the right has been actually activated, and no matter how much the populist left have been driven into the arms of the populist right, and no matter how incidental, like, I wouldn't say that seeing Jimmy Dore and Russell Brand and Joe Rogan and Tulsi Gabbard and even Tucker Carlson, and I mean, he's a right-wing guy, but like, Jimmy Dore is a populist leftist. Russell Brand is a populist leftist. Honestly, I'll tell you, Tulsi Gabbard is definitely a populist leftist. There are, and you know, there's the horseshoe theory, which is both extremes have more in common with each other than they do with the establishment center. So what happens when the observant Muslims, the observant Catholics, who in no way. Like, I just recently spoke to a Muslim friend. And if he said that his, he told me that if his son is gay or non-binary or trans, he'd kill him. And that in order to prevent that, like, if anything starts happening to that in a real way to his little family, he's going back to Albania. Like, fuck this. Right? So you have religious ADOS, American descendants of slavery blacks. You have Catholic Central and South Americans. You have immigrant Africans who are either Coptic or Orthodox or Muslim, and then you have Eastern European, Eastern Ukraine Orthodox, Russian Orthodox. You have Greek Orthodox. You have certain. You have people from South Asia who are very traditional in terms of gender and so forth. You have lots of people who have no concept of the rule of law, who have, like, they're first generation, right? They have no concept of the rule of law. They have a concept of might makes right. They have a concept of, if you take it, you keep it. And I'm really afraid of this activation, because even though, according to the media, it seems like, you know, if you combine black, brown, and Jewish people and add African-American people and then add LGBTQIA, it feels like it should be 50, 60, or 70% of the population. But if you add all those groups together, it's still... it's barely 20%, right? So there's 80, let's be generous, 70% people who are traditional, who believe in God, who might believe in angels, who believe in Muhammad, peace be upon him, who love Jesus, who love Krishna or love Vishnu, who believe that a family is a mother, father, and children, who believe in an extended family that includes grandparents, great-grandparents, aunties, and uncles. There are traditional values moving here. There are, since there is a great favoritism for people to keep their own culture, maintain their own culture, and support their own language in their family, there's very little incentive for anybody to assimilate into Western liberalism, neoliberalism. There's very little chance that short of second or third generation that these children will become humanist or atheists. And honestly, the only real atheists there are people in the Academy of Education. The only real atheists and humanists are scientists or people who have a undergrad or actually a graduate and a postdoc in a PhD or an MD, or even there are plenty of Jesus loving accountants, plenty of Jesus loving MBA people. There's plenty of Jesus loving engineers, and there's plenty of Jesus loving lawyers. But if you get into the world of first principles and evidence and all that kind of stuff, the world of mysticism and the world of magic and the world of the paranormal, in the world of the supernatural, in the world of the holy, go right out the door. But there's so few people who have graduate degrees in America. I mean, compared to the, 380 or 350 or 340 million Americans there are, this is going to be a big... It's sort of like, if I want to speak your language, it's sort of like carbon sequestration. Is that the right word? Sequestering carbon into the ground, right? And if you tear up the ground, then all the carbon gets released in the air. Like, that's always the fear, and probably a little bit to do with the popularity of the phrase, let sleeping giants lay, which is to say that they call it the moral majority, they call it the silent majority. These are people who, unless you increase the price of beer or challenge the right to guns or make gas too expensive, they will not be activated. And to be honest, all three of those things are in the air right now. So it'll be really interesting. I just know that whenever I listen to Alex Jones, he's constantly telling his listeners, I was tricked on January 6th. I was tricked on January 6th. It was a complete honeypot, bait and switch. I was tricked. So don't all y'all take up arms against anybody or anything, because that's going to be a trick too, like, and all that fun stuff. So anyway, I'm just rambling today. It is episode 51. Today's my dad's birthday. I lost him in 1995. He was 58 years old and had a massive coronary, and we died in Fajardo, Puerto Rico. And by saying we died, everybody in my company fell apart, so I had to take care of all of the details. But I lost something that day, man. I never got it back. It's heartbreaking to lose a parent. It's even heartbreaking to have lost my mom about 11 years ago. Still heartbroken about that, even though she wasn't necessarily my favorite person, but she was also my favorite person. Does that make any sense? So happy birthday, Dad. I love you. August 10th is his birthday. Anyway, talk to you soon. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Chris Abraham Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Until next time.